This past Wednesday was, of course, Earth Day. It's a day that was designed to bring attention to and focus on our environment. And I think it's safe to say that we all want clean water, clean air, habitable land for us and wildlife. The division comes about when how to achieve and maintain all that is discussed and debated. As my next guest points out with his new book, rather than being driven by true science, so-called environmental policies and programs are have been increasingly driven by things like agendas and, of course, money. He examines the pseudoscience, what drives it, how it's being responded to in climate porn, how and why anti-population zealots fabricate science while targeting American capitalism, freedom, and independence. He is an investigative journalist with Restoration News. His work's also featured at the Daily Signal and the Commonwealth Foundation. Kevin J. Mooney, thanks for being here today, Kevin.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here, for sure.
A couple of websites for Restoration News, restoration-news.com, and for Kevin's site, kevinmooney.info. We do, of course, have those links at our homepage as well. Set the foundation based on your title, Kevin. Why climate porn? What's the origin of that phrase, and why is it an effective description as you feature and explain in your book?
Yeah, that's a great question. Part of it comes into the investigations I did into education, curriculum, and how it was being taught going back to the COVID-19 shutdowns when parents first became aware of how radicalized and how pornographic some of the material was that their children were seeing. In tandem with that, I noticed that climate propaganda was also making its way into the classroom, sort of attacking the scientific method, telling young people that, you know, you coerce the outcome to suit your political agenda and then just manipulate the process any old which way. Well, of course, the scientific method is just the reverse. You have a hypothesis, you subject it to rigorous testing, and then you let the chips fall where they may. So I decided, correctly, I think, that approach to climate science was every bit as pornographic as the conventional version and every bit as destructive, too. So it was a way to sort of weave in together several themes.
Now, as you reveal in your book, too, you can go literally around the world to find examples of the activists failing to prove what they call to be science. But you really don't have to go far, at least for you. Or not. Your concerns and my concerns were both based here in New Jersey. And we just have to look at recent actions over the past, well, let's say a couple of years, regarding the Jersey Shore and the attempts for wind energy to be literally planted off the coast of New Jersey, which I guess it brings about the question, how can something which has failed so much in the past be looked at as a success today like these projects were?
Well, follow the money. A lot of the groups and organizations that support offshore wind are benefiting from it financially. But there's a little bit of good news here in terms of how they've been exposed. There was a pretty hard-fought battle by a group called Save LBI, as in Long Beach Island, a group of citizen activists opposed to offshore wind, how it would impact their property values, how it would impact the tourist industry, how it would impact their beach communities. What they found is they were squaring off against these well-heeled, well-funded climate activists who would acknowledge that there's some short-term environmental damage with offshore wind, but everything for them is in the name of climate. Their argument is that we need to sort of take a step back in terms of our environment for long-term gain. Sort of these theoretical, hypothetical climate damages that they forecast decades on out. Well, of course, this is all phony. If you go into the environmental impact statements for these offshore projects, they acknowledge that it's not going to have any impact on climate. It's all about a political agenda. But I think what's happened is you've seen a reemergence of genuine conservation and preservation that I think goes back to before the command and control approach of the 1970s. And that's beginning to reemerge and starting to take on these well-heeled climate activists that do not advocate initiatives that are good for the environment, quite the opposite.
And when you think of it, too, like just a couple of weeks ago, I know Clean Action New Jersey just did ocean sweeps to pick up garbage, as they do every year, several times a year, I think, actually. It's just an example of how if you have people power versus the will and the whims of conglomerates, which is going to be the winning side for the environment? I kind of think it's the power of the people.
Yeah, it is. And what I'm seeing is a broad cross-section of citizens across political lines, party lines, who were genuinely concerned about their local ecology. And like I say in the book, this offshore wind, I think, took the blinders off a bit, because I think they really saw for the first time that there's an awful lot of money in organization, also foreign money, by the way, tied up in these offshore wind schemes. And it does take a concerted, organized effort to face them down. I would say the good news, too, is you're, on the one hand, you're never going to outspend and outfundraise these well-heeled groups. They get donations and grants from big foundations and from outside of state. You need to raise enough money to get your message out. And that is what happened at the Jersey Shore. They were able to detail and demonstrate how damaging these offshore projects were, and were able to push back against the political class and put a stop to this. And, of course, having Trump come in was helpful, too, because there's been some changes at the federal level.
Story Kevin Mooney about his book, Climate Porn, How and Why Anti-Population Zealots Fabricate Science While Targeting American Capitalism, Freedom, and Independence. His work is featured at Restoration News, restoration-news.com, and his personal website. For all that is Kevin Mooney, kevinmooney.info, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. You include anti-population as part of the secondary title in your book, Kevin. These aren't eugenists, are they? They're not looking to thin out the population and work on thinning out the people to presumably protect the environment?
Well, there's a long history with this ideology. It's called Malthusianism, named after a British economist, Thomas Malthusius, who had this idea that we were running out of supplies and that the population was becoming a detriment to the planet, and that we needed to curb and curtail the growth of human populations. That metastasized over time into what I'll call an anti-population movement. And I go in the book about the common denominator in funding between the abortion industry and modern environmental activists. They essentially have the same goals, to constrain human population, constrain human creativity. They operate with the view that humanity is a blight to the planet. That movement has folded itself into the modern climate movement. Just follow the money, and it all starts to make sense.
And you also, as you feature in your book, Climate Porn 2, is follow how conclusions are arrived at. Maybe the most glaring, I think, for the maybe non-scientific mind is how so-called scientists use computer models versus old-school scientific observation, with the understanding being that you can tell a computer, get a computer, much like with any statistics, to get to the point you want to get to, where observation, what you're observing, has control, not you.
Well, exactly. I mean, a certain level of modeling is fine. It's all based on supposition. But the problem with it is it can also be used to manipulate public policy. You can pump in any old assumptions that you want to get a desired result and outcome. And the track record of the climate modeling, of course, is way off. They've greatly overestimated the amount of warming that has taken place, for one thing. And they've been used to lend themselves to very expensive regulatory policies that are not rooted in sound science. I will say the other bit of good news there, I do think the reemergence of a vigorous American space program, I think, you know, shows us the direction we're going in. If the Apollo program and the current moon program had relied on modeling rather than rigorous testing, we would have dead astronauts on successful missions. So I think what we're seeing is a real pushback against this anti-science climate activism that had made some considerable headway over the past few decades. So my great hope is that it's reached its high water mark and it's starting to recede.
What's the thing, too? The more people are interested in science, all aspects of science, and more aware of science, then the less likely any kind of climate panic will go unchallenged. But that also brings up to another point in your book, too, because by and large, climate policies are dictated rather than placed before legislative bodies, or certainly the people. I mean, it's rare it does happen, but if and when that ever rarely happens, most of those policies fail when left to population votes. Is that one of the aspects that has to be changed? Why are these bodies recognized to be able to dictate rather than a democratic system of allowing people to have the say through a vote?
Well, right. Remember what President Trump said in 2016. He said, "I represent Pittsburgh, not Paris," meaning no taxation without representation. That whole Paris Climate Treaty was forced onto us through the United Nations. It essentially involves energy taxes and energy costs. And if you're going to do that, you need a straight up and down vote in the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate. You don't let unelected, unaccountable international bureaucrats coerce those kind of policies onto us. It's anti-constitutional. Makes an end run around our democratic institutions. I think there's been an awakening to that, too. As you know, Trump did get out of the Paris Climate Agreement and also out of the UN Framework Agreement that made those treaties possible. That's an enduring, lasting change, because if a future president wants to try to get us back into those UN agreements, it means a two-thirds vote in the Senate. Only the Senate can approve treaties with a two-thirds vote. And I think Trump's done us all a favor by getting us out of these unaccountable, very expensive so-called climate agreements aimed at constraining American energy and also attacking our democratic system.
And this whole idea isn't limited to just a larger stage. You can look at the states, California, to be sure, and here in New Jersey. We have what's affectionately called the Highlands Act, but for farmers and homeowners has been called torture for many decades since it's implemented. I get the purpose of it, of protecting what is a large supplier of water for the majority of the state. But it's such a fine-tooth comb that there was a radio station here in the northwest part of the state. They had a transmitter facility, which was a metal trailer that was literally rusting away, and the equipment was going to drop out from the floor. And the state said, no, you can't build a brick building up there. Well, then how is the station going to communicate necessary information to the population supposed to serve if you won't let it transmit? So that just was a demonstration just how fine-tooth comb a good idea can become and turn it into a negative. Just to wrap up here, looking ahead, because you write in Climate Porn, too, how organizations and groups are fighting back for rational, honest science. How important is it to get true science to the kids in schools versus preaching, you know, teaching instead of preaching?
You know, I think this intersects with a growing school choice movement. Unfortunately, in the public school system, we still see that propaganda being burrowed in there. There's all these different state directives about climate, which attack the scientific method. But you do see a growing movement of homeschoolers, of private schools, alternative institutions where real science is being taught. I think it's up to parents to continue to get organized, to monitor what their kids are being taught. And I think the great hope to get actual science in the classroom is through the school choice movement. There's legions of problems with a lot of our public schools, not just on the climate question, but across the board. But I think that the whole COVID episode gave a shot in the arm to the school choice movement. I think that intersects with the teaching of sound science. So, again, there are some hopeful trend lines. Where it goes from here, we'll see. But at least there's been some incremental movement back in a good direction.
Well, to put it mildly, change comes through understanding. And with Kevin's book, Climate Porn, How and Why Anti-Population Zealots Fabricate Science While Targeting American Capitalism, Freedom, and Independence, you will gain a better understanding and the role you can play in bringing that understanding, giving a greater volume to that understanding. Find out more about Kevin's work at kevinmoody.info. He is also a contributor to Restoration News, restoration-news.com. Kevin Mooney, thank you for the clarity of science that helped people understand its importance and value to be true science. And thank you for being here today.
Oh, likewise. Anytime. Thank you so much.